Hi, this is David Levitt, short story writer and novelist, and you're listening to New York & Company with Leonard Lopate on WNYC AM 820, New York Public Radio.
The U.S. military has never come up with a workable strategy for dealing with gays in the armed forces. The beating death of a serviceman in Fort Campbell, Kentucky this past summer, and the subsequent change in policy from don't ask, don't tell to don't ask, don't tell, don't harass just points up that failure. Now playwright and actor Mark Wolf has put together a one-man show on the subject, Another American Asking and Telling, for which he interviewed more than 150 people over the course of 3 years. We hear from gay, lesbian, and straight members of the services, as well as their relatives, in a stark yet moving performance that resonates long after we've left the theater. Another American Asking and Telling is on stage at the theater at St. Clement's, and I'm very pleased that its creator, Mark Wolf, was able to join us today on New York & Company. Hello.
Hello.
And you started working on this project over 3 years ago. Why this? And did you know that by the time you finished, it would still be an issue?
No. In fact, when I started working on it, it was not an issue. It had been completely buried by the don't ask, don't tell policy and the different branches of government sort of trying to move on to other things and keep it quiet. So that's sort of why I started doing it. Was in 93 and 94, we'd been hearing from these amazing Americans who were gay in the military, who I thought broke down so many stereotypes of what we think gay people are and what we think military people are. And then in 96, when I was started, they had sort of disappeared from the national scene, and I thought that they were amazing people who had amazing stories, and I wanted to find out what they were.
Although not all of them want you to even give their names for this.
Right, I knew that would happen. Many of the people in the play are anonymous, because of careers in the military that they need to protect, or even careers in civilian society.
Why do you think so many gay people want to serve in the military that has never really accepted them?
I think there are a number of reasons. One is just simple patriotism. People want to serve their country, and this is a way we Americans have traditionally given back to our country, and the people, many of them, are just so patriotic. There's also, you know, it's a class thing as well. Many people in small towns around the country, it's the only way to get out of town and get an education and build a career.
I suspect some of them don't even know they're gay until they're in the military. Some people don't really realize certain aspects of their sexuality until they're in their late teens, early 20s.
Or even early 30s, I've talked to people. Yeah.
The technique you use here is one we associate with Anna Deavere Smith. She interviews people and then impersonates them. Was she an inspiration here?
Complete and total inspiration, yes. She really is. I saw Twilight L.A. A few years back, and I thought, what a brilliant way to approach a complicated issue and not get bogged down in plot and use stories that are so amazing. You just tell these stories, and I think that's enough.
And both of you like to deal with political hot potato issues.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one way to do that, because you can present all sides.
Right. And I really did do that. I mean, although I felt that I wanted to know about gays in the military that I was no longer hearing anything about, I also knew that to create a good piece of theater, I wanted to learn from military people themselves how they really felt about it. What was the rationale behind the policy? And, you know, we only sort of get a sort of, you know, Pentagon public statement usually when you're asked about this. So I talked to a lot of straight military people anonymously, too, who gave me their views of it.
And then you had to narrow it down from the 150.
To 18. Yeah.
So did you put some people together, make composite people?
No, they're all literal people that I interviewed, separate people that I interviewed.
And then you put a tape recorder on the stage.
That was Joe Mantell's idea.
The
director. I always felt that it was very important that my process of gathering these interviews be part of the play somehow, because there's something so theatrical in people's resistance to talking about it and the danger of them being taped and identified. And that was a very, I felt, theatrical part of it. And I never really came up with a great idea, but he said, hey, let's just stick this tape recorder on stage and the audience knows what's going on. And
I would have assumed that you would have videotaped them, because the physical aspect of their talking, it comes across very strongly. Do you just have a good memory, or did you videotape them?
I did not videotape anybody, first of all, because so many were anonymous, it would have made them more nervous. And, you know, when you put people in front of a camera, if they're not used to it, there can be a little bit of reservedness, and this little tiny tape recorder you end up forgetting about, and then they can, if they need to tell, run around the room to tell a story, which some of my characters do, then they don't feel confined. And I have a good memory, and I would take notes afterwards, and I would pick up mannerisms and things like that as I was talking to them.
Anna Deavere Smith uses props sometimes, hats and other things, but you don't even do this. No costume changes, nothing, just a neutral t-shirt, trousers, and then just the way you move and the way
right.
you talk. In fact, sometimes it takes a few seconds to realize we're seeing a new character. So how difficult was it to define and learn the body language of so many different people?
It took me a while over workshops and getting them into my body. But for me, what it does when I don't use props and I don't use costumes is the audience has to really tune their ears to listening to what the people are saying to try and identify who they are. And I think that it just, because it was on tape and I had to listen to this so much, the audience also has to listen to find out about what's going on.
And we're constantly reminded that these people were being interviewed by a stranger. Many of them were made uncomfortable by that. For you, it adds extra problems because you want this to be an engaging theatrical experience. So there's always the tendency to want to entertain, and at the same time you want it to be really true to what this was all about.
Well, I think there's something very dramatic when the audience understands how hard it is for some of these people to start talking about it, and the trust building that I had to do with these people, and slowly through the play they slowly open up.
I suspect that you had less difficult time with the gays and lesbians because they would have assumed that you were sympathizing with what they were all about, whereas you might have had a bit more resistance from anti-gay soldiers.
Well, gays and lesbians, there's such a thing about not talking about who you are when you're in the military, so I felt that they did have some trouble talking to me. The straight people are, I think, more used to telling their stories.
Mm-hmm. They weren't suspicious of you?
No, I think because I really tried to come at this with a very open attitude. I didn't come at it with an agenda. And I was really there to learn from these people. And I didn't know a lot about the military. So for me, I think they felt me being open and wanting to learn about it.
The strongest anti-gay argument has to do with behavior rather than sexual orientation. An officer describes the havoc caused by a man who is performing oral sex on every guy in the unit.
Mm-hmm.
And we can all understand that could be a real problem. If a woman were doing the same thing, it would create chaos.
Right. And I think, that's something that really needs to be looked at. Of course, I don't think there are any of the gay people I talk to that would say that person should not have been thrown out of the military. You know, what they say is that there are conduct regulations and that this is speech and they want to be able to say who they are.
Mm-hmm. Well, you also point out that there's more homosexual activity in the military than most people think.
Well, I mean, it's definitely an issue. It's definitely something that goes on, and I did not want to shy away from the facts. There is homosexual activity. There is illegal heterosexual activity that goes on as well. And I think what many people I talk to, again, try to make clear to me is that there's a difference between what the behavior is and then what someone's speech rules might be and what their orientation might be.
Were you surprised by some of the things you'd heard in these interviews?
Everything was a surprise. I have to say almost every interview my jaw would hit the floor. For instance, when I interviewed Charles Moskos, I didn't really realize how he was the architect of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. What a real political maneuver the policy was to sort of save Clinton at the beginning of his presidency. I was surprised that there were gay people who felt that they shouldn't, that gays maybe should not be out in the military yet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I definitely got both sides of the issue even from gay people themselves.
What about differences between the experiences of lesbians and gay men?
I think lesbians have it much harder. And I think lesbians were also more reticent in talking to me.
But they're less likely to be beaten up, aren't they?
I don't know if that's true. The thing is that because the military is still such a male establishment, that a lot of women, whether they're gay or heterosexual or homosexual, a lot of women are targets of being branded lesbian just for someone to hurt their career. And just because the military is such sort of a masculine environment, a lot of straight women get branded being lesbian.
More, it's usually assumed there's a higher percentage of lesbians in the military than there are gay men.
Well, right. If you're a woman in the military, people are more likely to assume that you're a lesbian. If you're a man in the military, people are more likely to assume that you're heterosexual.
Do you think things are any better nowadays?
No, I don't. I think that the policy let everybody know that there are gays in the military. So now the people who are gay in the military have to be, I think, much more careful about what they say and what they do on the weekends and who they hang out with, because there's much, people are out looking for them now, I think, more.
Probably the most heartbreaking moment in the piece is your interview with the mother of a sailor who was beaten to death by his shipmates. Was that difficult for you to listen to?
It was very difficult. I interviewed her in her home, and honestly, I had to keep reminding myself that I was sitting in this room with this woman. I felt myself keep, my mind keep trying to get away from it because her pain is so present.
When, after the performance, did people come up to you and want to share experiences?
Yeah. People have their stories, and I try and, you know, stay in touch with people and maybe interview them later as well.
How long is this running at the St. Clement?
Right now it's running through February 6th. And it's produced by the new group at St. Clement's Church.
Which is located?
On 46th Street between 9th and 10th Avenue in the new renovated Hell's Kitchen.
Mark Wolf, thank you so much for coming by to talk about Another American Asking and Telling, now at the Theater St. Clement's.
Thank you.